Man, college football is starting to heat up in a big way. Pitt and Penn State are a combined 14-0, Bob. This is good stuff. I'm just really, really hoping, praying that we see a playoff game between them. Would that be great
theater?
That
would be wonderful.
Or what?
And it really would be, but you have to ask yourself how many teams from each of these conferences are going to get in here.
I know. Here's the thing about Pitt. Best chances
Pitt can
it won't.
Ruin it for somebody like Clemson. If they win out, you know, and beat Clemson along the way, which I don't know if this is possible, but if they do, that would take care of Clemson. And Miami, who I expect to win the ACC, would be one of the teams that gets a first-round bye, and then Pitt could be the team that gets in as the second ACC team.
Let me ask you a silly question, Bob. Is this Pitt game at SMU Pitt's biggest game in the last 40 years?
You may consider
the ACC title game a few years ago to be one of them. You may consider Pitt-Cincinnati when they had a chance, I think.
That was in 2009.
If I'm remembering, to win the Big East outright.
Yeah, and all they had to do was beat that team in UConn.
But here's my point in terms of big picture. And you can laugh all you want, not you, but anybody out there. I don't think Pitt's going to win the national title. But they are 7-0, and if the biggest goal out there is to win the national title, you have to get to the playoff to get there. So in terms of overall biggest goal you can have, this game might be their biggest since like 1982 or something. You could make that argument.
You could make that argument.
I think. I may be missing one. If I am, text City Limits at 412-928-9370.
Well, the ACC championship game is, you can't get any further along in a conference when they only had four playoff teams.
Right, but their chance to win a national title had long since been dead.
I get it. And I don't know if that would change anything here. I don't think they're going to be in that position to win these games. Listen, if they want
a chance to win the national title, they have to win at SMU.
Or get in the playoff. That may last until 2 weeks from now when they play Clemson.
Sure.
And then you'd say the same thing.
Control the controllables,
right,
Bob.
But they're heavy underdogs to SMU here.
What's the point spread?
Almost 7. It's 6.5.
Holy bird follicles. So, I didn't think that was... SMU's coming off a game where they had 6 turnovers.
And still won.
They look like the Bills
and
in a Super Bowl.
And still won. Do you know the record of teams that committed 6 turnovers?
It was like the first time in 20 years or something.
And 125. 1 and 125, and SMU is that one. They defied every possible odds there by winning a game where they committed 6 turnovers. They're not going to do that again. But that gives me some hope if I'm Pitt. If you play an airtight kind of game on the road, but their defense, while playing well, their offense is not playing well right now. They're going to have to go down there and score because SMU will score points on them.
That's why I felt like keeping Holstein in the game, at least for that touchdown throw last week, was important. If you can get the first 5-game Eli Holstein in this offense, one of the highest scoring offenses in the country, with the defense the way it's currently playing, then you got yourselves a ball club here, Bob. I don't know that that's going to happen. I don't know what the state of Holstein is right now, coming off whatever injury he had in that game. But man, I mean, this is in terms of if you play college football to be eligible for a national championship, to keep yourself every week in the running, then this is Pitt. This is one of a handful of Pitt's biggest games in the last 40 years. Let's just put it that way. Going into SMU to go 8-0, which then sets you up at home against Virginia. And if you win that one, and you better, because Virginia stinks, then all of a sudden you have one of the biggest games, college games, in this town in forever.
And one of the biggest ones, if not the biggest, on the slate that Saturday.
Yes.
Because it would be likely a top 15 or better team in Pitt against Clemson, which if they keep winning, you're going to end up with who has a better matchup, and that'll be a night game on some major network, I would think.
The Fighting Dabo Sweeney's coming to town.
So you asked the question, how big is this game for Penn State?
Okay, let's move on to Penn State.
Considering that they have Ohio State, they have problems, but this is an opportunity to do something in this playoff.
You very discreetly moved on to Penn State there, Bob, and I appreciate that. What did you make of their game the other night? I thought it was significant because I thought they were in a whole bunch of trouble with their quarterback injured on the road against, I think, a decent Wisconsin team.
Always tough to play there, yep.
And they showed some character in that game. And the backup quarterback looked pretty good.
I thought they're
I don't think he's better than Drew Aller, as Filippone tweeted.
No, it's too early to say that. But I you know, Penn State has shown a lot of gritty qualities. They went to USC and they were battling that whole game, and they had to come back and win it, which they did. And in this game too, same situation. Low adversity thrown in their way, and they've now to have, for this all to make sense, they have to beat Ohio State at home. It's set up this way for that reason. Ohio State, I think, is a very beatable team. They struggled last week. They're not what they used to be. And Ryan Day is under a lot of pressure
as well.
What do
you mean by that?
I mean, I don't think they're as good as what they've been. I think they're a good team, but I think they're doable. I think Penn State should win this game.
Here's what I asked my stepson, Michael Menko. You ready for this?
What did Michael Menko have to say?
I asked him. He's Penn State grad, Penn State fan. I said, is this Franklin's best team? He said, and he's had some good ones, Bob. He said, not as good as 2016, but better QB. I said, what was better about that team? He thought more NFL players, but then he said, maybe this is a better, quote, team, but not better talent. I'd have to go back and look closely because there's some other 11-win teams in there that compare. But is there a chance this is his best team?
I don't know that. I mean, there's a chance, sure. But it will. It's all predicated on beating Ohio State.
Yes,
they have
is.
Not done this.
But even if they lose, will they make the playoffs? I think so, if they win out, right? How many teams from the Big Ten are going to make it?
I think you're going to get four from the Big Ten.
You're going to get at least three.
No, four.
Who's the fourth? I just
it could be Penn State. If you say one loss, they'll get in with one
so
loss.
So who's the third? Indiana?
So you have
Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State.
They're getting in. Unless the collapse, monumental collapse happens.
I look at the latest
Ohio
USA.
Ohio State, Oregon, maybe Indiana. You've been on Indiana's bandwagon here, so maybe they are the team.
When was I on Indiana's bandwagon?
You kept saying they're beating everyone and they're doing it well.
I just mentioned them to you offhandedly during the break. Now you're accusing them of
being on their bandwagon. I think you'll see four teams. Minimum three, four. I think ACC will only get two.
I don't think you're going to see four. Unless Indiana beats Ohio State.
Well.
At Ohio State. I don't think you're going to see four.
Okay, where does Notre Dame fit in all of this?
I'm just going to tell you one projection I'm looking at.
SEC will have two teams.
Here's the projection.
Right? No, they'll have more than two.
No, they won't.
By U.S.
Name them.
Georgia's getting in.
Georgia and Tennessee are the only two I see.
Tennessee's getting in.
I can't remember who the hell plays in the SEC.
They're going to find a way to put Ole Miss or Alabama in. Probably Alabama.
No, Alabama's on the bubble. They had two bad losses. They're not getting in.
Texas is getting in. They're in the SEC now.
That's true. They could get in. I forgot about them. And I did not think of them being in the SEC. All this stuff is confusing me with
it's
conference.
All, it's more confusing. So is Texas A&M is in the SEC.
But they're not getting in.
Bob.
They're not getting in. They're a bubble team for me right now.
Can I tell you USA Today's projections right now?
Sure.
If I may. Top four, Oregon, Georgia, Miami, and Iowa State.
Not Kansas State. I like Kansas State better than I do
Kansas
Iowa State.
No, not Kansas State. Five, Penn State, six, Ohio State, seven, Texas, eight, Tennessee, nine, Clemson, 10, Notre Dame, 11, Texas A&M, and 12, Boise State.
Boise State has to get in, right?
So some of the matchups you would see, here's the first round matchups, Penn State against Boise State. By the way, as a little aside here, and I feel very strongly about this, the greatest college football game I've ever seen in my entire life was Boise State, Oklahoma. I watched it with
with
my parents, Bink and Evie in Buffalo. Evie has never sat through an entire college football game. She sat through that one with us. And at the end of the game, myself, Bink, and Evie stood and clapped. It ended with the kid, the running back, proposing to the cheerleader.
That was a great night.
It was the greatest spectacle in the history of college football. But that's just an aside, Bob. Ohio State against Texas A&M. That'd be a good game. Texas against Notre Dame and Tennessee against Clemson. And then you'd have, of course, the top four. You'd have some unbelievable
So what would
games
be the next matchup? Let's assume, pick winners of those first four games
mentioned. He says you would have Penn State, Boise State winner playing Iowa State in the quarterfinals.
All right.
Ohio State, Texas A&M winner against Miami, which could be Pitt.
That would be great.
Pitt will probably be at large.
Does SMU still have a shot at this?
Of course.
Right, they're,
of course
we haven't
they
mentioned
do.
Them, but if they beat Pitt.
Yeah. Georgia, let's see. Georgia would play the winner of Texas-Notre Dame. That'd be a grade A matchup. And Oregon would play the winner of Tennessee-Clemson.
I like Oregon-Tennessee. That would be a big match.
Do have Pitt. Does Pat Forty, can you look and see if Pat Forty still has Pitt as an at-large, a limitless wonder?
I don't think Pitt has to win, I think, out.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, they're not, if they lose a game like the SMU, they're not, you know, they fall behind them and then other teams. It's all in front of them right now. So
who does Miami play?
A one.
Pardon me?
They've played basically no one this year, and they lost on what could have been a Hail Mary to, what, Virginia Tech? They should have lost to Cal. They were down by 20 points in the fourth quarter.
Well, what is their schedule the rest of the way? That's what I want to know. The ACC, all these conferences are completely screwed up, Bob. You play certain teams, you don't play others. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's hard to gauge.
Although there would be an ACC championship, right?
Yes. Miami has Duke, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, and Syracuse.
But let's just say this about Miami.
Miami doesn't play Clemson or Pitt in the regular season.
Nope.
Miami should have lost to Cal.
Yep.
They should have lost to Virginia Tech.
Yep.
So even though they look good on paper, they're vulnerable.
Hold on.
I think one of those teams can beat them.
I have a question, and pardon my ignorance, because I haven't really dived into this yet. If Pitt goes unbeaten, they'll be in the ACC title game, right? Against Miami, likely?
If they be clean, yeah, probably Miami.
Okay, so Pitt-Miami in the ACC championship. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, so Pitt goes all the way there unbeaten and loses to Miami in that game.
They get into the playoffs.
They still get in?
I would say.
Will it be highly questionable if they'll get in? Or are they, you think that's automatic? What do you think, Limits?
No, I would think they would get in. I think there would probably be some people with questions about a two-bit ACC team if it's not Clemson, but I think they would get in.
I do think, though, two of them. You're going to have two teams from
that
conference.
Why would people say, like right now, USA Today saying Clemson-Miami are in, and if Pitt's
they're
the
assuming,
team...
Because they're assuming Clemson's going to beat Pitt.
Well, no, but here's the thing I'm questioning. If you're going to say right now that Clemson and Miami are in from the ACC and Pitt vaults over Clemson, would you then not include Pitt? Like, that's the scenario you're saying. Like, they'd be less inclined to have two teams if it's Pitt. Why?
I think there's just an overall viewpoint of Clemson being a superior program, whether that's historically or what Cade Klubnik and those guys are doing right now. But I think maybe just so much of Pitt last year winning three games and really catapulting themselves this year.
Miami's going to get in just
again. I don't think they would.
You don't think Pitt will get in if they go unbeaten and lose to Miami in the title game?
Or no, that's what I said, that they would.
Yes,
I said that they would.
All right.
But if they lose to Clemson...
Does Pat Forty have them in? Yeah, if they lose to Clemson, then they're done, I think.
They're probably done. Yeah. Pat Forty still has Pitt in as the 11.
That, Bob. Who are they playing?
So 11 versus 6, who would they play?
They would play Georgia.
Well, no.
Not in the first round.
Yes, they would.
Yes, they would in the first round.
In that scenario, with Georgia does not win...
Let's go.
So what would the line be on Pitt, Georgia?
Pitt already beat Georgia in a big game.
What would 40, the line be?
Well, how about this? Pat Forty also has Ohio State out of the playoffs in this situation. Clemson, this is his updated.
Let's hear his 1 through 10 updated, because I do really like him.
Oregon, number 1, winning the Big Ten. Texas A&M, number 2, winning the SEC.
Okay.
BYU.
Why is that so crazy, Bob?
I don't like their team.
Why?
Go ahead. I just
Everybody's
don't.
Picking them to at least be in the playoffs, so why couldn't they be 1 or 2 instead of 9, 10, or 11? That's not crazy.
No. I just don't think that's going to happen, but go ahead.
And part of it is the SEC is just going to keep beating up on each other. BYU 3 is the Big 12 champ. Oh. Miami 4 is the ACC champ with the automatic bids.
Mm-hmm.
Penn State 5.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia 6.
Yeah.
Indiana 7. So this is... Pat saying that Indiana is going to beat Ohio State, basically.
Are you sure he's saying that?
Well, I mean, he has Ohio State out.
Oh, yeah.
He would be saying that. If Ohio State's not in it, then they're going to fall to Penn State and Indiana.
Well, is that so crazy?
No.
Have you seen Indiana's scores? Anybody?
I've seen their scores. I haven't seen them play necessarily.
Yeah, they're crushing teams.
Yeah.
They're absolutely annihilating teams. Now, have they played anybody yet? No. They haven't played a ranked team on the day of the game yet. But they're beating teams... They've won every game by double digits, and a lot of them by way more than that. We'll find out when they go to Ohio State. He thinks they're good, obviously.
He has Texas 8, Notre Dame 9, Iowa State 10.
There yeah. you go.
USA
That's
has them
who I
fourth.
Like them.
Yeah.
Pitt 11, Boise 12.
I love it. And Pitt against Georgia to open.
What would the line be? 12.
14 and a half okay. at Georgia. What do you think?
I was going to say 10, but Georgia's
It has to be double digits.
By double digits.
But yeah. then again, Pitt will be going into that game by his plan, having beaten Clemson, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Pitt might be better than Miami. I don't know if they're as good as Clemson.
Could you imagine a 12-team field with no Ohio State, no Clemson, or no Tennessee?
I can imagine anything at this point, yes.
Let me just say, though, this is the problem with this kind of stuff when we get into this. I like 12, don't get me wrong. But I just told you, Limits, that I thought Miami should have lost, right, two games.
I'm in full agreement, yes.
Right. Pitt also should have lost at least two games.
Yeah.
They came back from the dead, and if I'm going to penalize Miami for a bad look and barely win, then I'd have to look at Pitt and say they shouldn't be. West Virginia game should not have been a win for them. West Virginia screwed the whole thing up. And they came back. I give them credit, full credit. But
here's the thing with Pitt, though, Bob, for me, is that kid came in here last week as one of the best quarterbacks in the country, statistically. And Pitt absolutely embarrassed him and them. If they, and it looks to me, even though he's had a rough couple weeks, I still like Eli Holstein. I just think he hit a little bump in the road. What I'm saying is, if they put both sides together, which is possible, it's not unthinkable. There have been years where you're like, yeah, that's not going to happen for Pitt. One side is way better than the other. And funny enough, when they've had their best teams, they've been all offense, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Under Narduzzi. I see potential there for both. I know this much. I'm going to be riveted to that game at 8 a.m. Saturday.
8 p.m.
Yeah.
If it's 8 a.m., I'm
8
not
p.m.
watching.
Yeah, 8 p.m. Limits is having a party, Bob.
You're going to get up at 4 a.m. to go to the party tailgate.
It's like breakfast at Wimbledon.
Bob, I'm going to have to get to Happy Valley on like Wednesday to be able to get there in time for the Saturday noon game.
Are you going to Penn State?
I'm going up for the game this weekend.
When
yes.
are you going? When are you leaving?
Well, that's the thing. Either I leave after our high school football coverage on KDKA, which yeah. I won't get out until about 10:30 and then yeah. drive all the way up.
Drive halfway up Limits and stay in a hotel. Bob will treat.
Well, I'm going to stay at my sister's apartment.
There you go. Same thing.
So, or... I would drive up Saturday morning and have to leave at like 5 a.m.
What time would you get to your sister's apartment if you leave Friday night?
You hate those noon starts.
I can't stand it.
Limits. Go there. You wake up the next morning bright and early, have a nice breakfast. You have no drive in front of you. Just go over to the stadium. Bob, is that the way you'd go?
Yeah,
you sleep
I would.
Over
for
at
a
your
noon
sister's
game,
house?
For a
yeah.
noon game, I wouldn't want to drive in the morning.
No, that would
way.
Be horrifying.
No, I've done it before, and I've gotten there like 3 hours before kickoff, and it gets to be a lot.
Yeah, it's just too much running around. No enjoyment factor there.
And security is going to be enhanced. They got college game days there. Big Noon's there. President Trump's there. It's crazy what's going to everything that's going on. It's like a madhouse going to be getting in there parking-wise.
You going as a fan or a media guy?
I'll be going as a fan.
What a nice fan you are. Where does Pat Forty have Penn State?
Fifth.
So he basically has, Bob, one of the most respected college football writers in America, has Pitt and Penn State one little slot apart from playing. Am I right about that, Limits?
That's correct.
I would love to see it. It would
oh
be
my God.
Terrific to see it. And, man, you talk about something that people have been waiting for forever in a significant game. Man, who do you like if they play?
If they played right now, probably Penn State.
I would say Penn State, too.
But I like a hell of a game.
But I think Pitt's defense is getting better as the year goes on, and that's important.
Way better. Way better on one given day. To me, the whole key to Pitt's season now is the rebound of Eli Holstein. And I was very encouraged. That last touch, his touchdown pass the other night when they kept him in, that was a Kenny Pickett pass from a few years ago. Right at the goal line. Just an absolute laser beam. That was beautiful, yeah. wasn't it? And then I thought they should have taken him out.
Yeah, he needed something good to build on. No,
yeah.
There's no question because that game didn't have many. I mean, first of all, it's hard to get an offensive flow when you're never on the field, and they were never on the field in the first half because pick sixes lead to more possession time for the other team.
And both teams are also dealing with injuries at the quarterback position, guys. Narduzzi this morning talking to the media said, we'll wait and see on Eli Holstein.
That's not good.
Nate Yarnell is going to get some first-team reps.
So is that a concussion-related thing, do you think? Because he kept looking at his face.
I mean, you have to think about it, yeah.
That's why he should have been out of the game.
He should have been after he threw the touchdown, yeah. He should have been. Yes, Bob.
And Drew Aller was injured. They think it's a knee injury in the game against Wisconsin, and his status is up for grabs.
Well, based on what I saw, I like their backup situation better than Pitt's, but I wouldn't want to be in either situation. See, that stinks if they go into SMU without Holstein. It really
does.
Well,
if that's the case, that line will move significantly higher, too.
Lastly, as we get ready to go back to tonight's game, a quick thought on the Penguins.
You need more than a quick thought.
I mean, the obvious story now is Mike Sullivan's job security. I'm sorry, this is a disastrous start. His team is simply not playing, and there could be a million reasons for it, right? With every coach firing in the history of sports, there's a million reasons for it. His team is not playing the way that he wants them to play, and they haven't for a long time. They're one of the worst defensive teams in hockey. They give up more breakaways than a pregame warm-up.
The other night was ridiculous.
Odd man breaks. It's just their special teams are middling. They're not doing what he wants. He's not reaching his team. Maybe nobody could. So I would say I'm going to look at this three-game homestand, and if this is disastrous, Bob, I think I'd be in favor of moving on if I'm not already from Mike Sullivan.
The problem is, too, this is not just happening now. This has been a reflection of how they've conducted business. And when you're willing to bring everyone back in a nostalgic way, which they've done, and I understand that, but then you better have some support people around you who can do. Because if I'm looking at the problem with this team right now, maybe the last few games, like, for example, the other night, we saw no shots on goal in the entire game for Malkin, Letang, and Crosby. It's the first time that's happened in a long, if ever. They're not the problem. The problem is they don't have a lot of other things working for them right now. Their defense of play is horrible.
Would you fire Sully?
It would depend on – I have to see more games here. But
How many more?
Because they've done it before, probably before the new year. I would wait that long just to see how they react
but
to this.
But you would agree he's on a blazing hot seat?
Yes, absolutely. I think Dubas, you know, is in that boat. He inherited a lot of bad things from Hextall, so I have to give him a little bit of leeway there, but some of his signings have not been good. Ryan Graves, multi-year. Tristan Jarry, but I think that was more Mike Sullivan doing that, don't you? I mean, Mike Sullivan liked Tristan Jarry. Dubas came in.
That falls under Kyle Dubas's.
But I think he was influenced.
Pretty soon he's going to be known as Kyle Dupe Us, Bob, because so far he has duped us. He's got, what, $50 million? $55 invested in Ryan Graves and Tristan Jarry?
Yeah.
And people are buying this idea that
Riley Smith and they're still paying him.
People are buying the idea that he's also executing a rebuild because he got a couple second round picks back. Are you kidding me? It's been all in try to win, except for not signing Gensel. Except for that. It's been all in try to win. He's brought in old guys. He's brought in huge contracts. He's re-signed the goalie. He's failing miserably in his mission here. Miserably.
And Michael Bunting is part of the problem now, too. I thought he'd be a better player for them so far. It's only 10 games. I would expect that to change. But, man, if that's what you're going to get in exchange for Gensel because they didn't have the money to pay him, that's pretty much where they are. But their defensive play, to your point, watch the game the other night, 2-0, moving along, Vancouver, all of a sudden, just a jailbreak of opportunities.
You reminded me of something.
They get three games, 3 goals in 60 seconds, 4 and 5 minutes, and the game's over. And they're all 2-on-1s, 3-on-2s. It's the same culprits, too.
Forever, Sullivan has talked about we need to be hard to play against. Is there anybody easier to play against than the Penguins right now?
No. The teams are not earning their goals. They've been gifted their goals by the Penguins.
And now I can't find the quote. Vancouver's coach, I believe, had a quote. No, it wasn't Tockett. It was the game
Patrick
before
Alvin,
that.
It was
the game before that, like something to the effect
the Oilers
of, yeah, this wasn't the most difficult situation.
Well, they had 90 shot attempts, 50 on goal.
If Jarry plays that game, it's 17-0.
Yeah, Blomqvist was very good, I thought, in that game. But he was under so much pressure.
You like the Kyle Dupas nickname limits?
Yes, I think Ron would, too.
Your thoughts on the Penguins, quickly?
You're a pathetic person.
I feel like just... A lot of it needs to just start falling on accountability for Mike Sullivan. I mean, when's the last time that they won a playoff series? 2018? Like, there are so many issues that you can point to, so many fingers to be pointed at, but I feel like when Crosby and Malkin are healthy the last three seasons, they played every game, and you can't even you sniff the playoffs, but you can't actually get there in what is an open field where so many teams in the East make the playoffs, and you still can't get in. I mean, Dubas only in his second year. Sullivan is really the one that should bear the weight of this because Tristan Jarry was his guy. And
well, that's what I say. I think he was the guy more than anyone who wanted to support Jarry and keep him here longer term. And if that's the case, you better make sure he gets it right.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Bob. I found it. Chris Knobloch, the Oilers coach.
Head coach, yeah.
He earned that shutout, he said, of his goalie. That was one of his easier games to play. If there's anybody anywhere in North America who wonders about the state of the Pittsburgh Penguins, who, if known for nothing else in their history, are known as a high-powered, you know, star-laden team almost all the time, you just had a coach say that was one of our goalies, quote, easier games to play. Wow.
Yeah, well, you don't want that. And again, it's obvious. It's just too easy. They're you know, Erik Karlsson, and he got beat on pucks going back. I mean, Erik Karlsson, that's
a
move
disaster,
that
Bob.
Dubas made. And you'd have to agree to this point, it's been a bad move. Would you agree with that? I mean, they got rid of contracts.
Course.
They got rid of contracts. Again, yeah. They had a Granlund contract they didn't want, although he's been better since he left. But you know what I mean?
Of course. But it's still, to me, at least there you're in the Rutherford realm of stepping to the plate and taking a big swing, which I can live with the miss. The misevaluation of a guy like Ryan Graves and putting all that money into a questionable goalie. Again, that's $53 million in Ryan Graves and Tristan Jarry. That's fireable in and of itself. What is he doing? Who's giving him advice?
Well, the bottom line is those two may ultimately be the reason down the road that he's not here. You know, I don't know how long they
stick. He had one mission in Toronto. That was to fix their goaltending. He never did, and then he screwed it up here too. But according to a lot of Penguins media, he's doing a great job.
But to that point, they have no choice but to try to rehabilitate Tristan Jarry. I don't think you can just say, that's it, we're done, and eat all that money. I don't. I think they have to try. He had a game the other night. He looked okay, but that was down in Wilkes-Barre-Scranton. He is such, his confidence seems to be gone. And how do you get the confidence back?
I don't know. I don't know that you ever do. I don't know.
You've seen goalies go up and
he
down.
He looks broken to me, but more to the point, there's enough teams in the NHL that get by every year on cheap goaltending because the variance – unless you have a Connor Hellebuck or somebody, the variance between goalie number 5 and goalie number 20 is such that why would you spend that much money on a goalie? Go out and find Freddie Anderson and stick him in net for a year, and he's going to give you anything Jarry could.
If Tristan Jarry was a decent goaltender, $5 million is not all that much for a decent goaltender. You know what I mean? There are guys making $10 million.
Bob. Committing well, $28 million.
You're talking about the term. If you have a problem with the term,
absolutely.
That's fine.
The term
but
equals
I'm talking about
the money
actual,
in the end.
The actual money yearly. If he's sure. Okay, that's not overwhelming.
I'd rather spend half that and get a guy who will give me approximate what he could do.
Are you equating them
good.
To running backs in football that you could find them anywhere?
Absolutely.
Okay.
To where there's a few elite ones that I would do a lot to get, a lot to draft, all that, and the rest of them, they actually do grow on trees these days, goalies. They do. And to invest $28 million in a guy who had all those question marks around him when Dubas got here was an act of hockey insanity, is what it was. And it's not hindsight either, because a lot of us said it at the time. It's foresight, which he hasn't shown. Thank you, Bob. Bob, the last thing I'll say about the Penguins is this Tristan Jarry debacle. What is happening here? Josh Yoey had Jarry quoted as saying, I think during the trip, that he couldn't wait to get back to Edmonton to see his family and things
that.
Then Sullivan and the Penguins claimed that this was all part of the plan, was to send him back across North America in the middle of the trip to go work with their goaltending guy. What?
Makes no sense whatsoever. And then his denial that this is a healthy scratch, it's exactly what it is. I mean, you can term it anything you want to term it.
When did this become, you know, everybody plays Dairy Queen after the game type stuff? How about this? He stinks right now, so he's not playing, and we send him back home. He's making $28 million, and he's not performing. How about that?
But I also don't know what they gain with it's not the Penguins goalie coach who's working with him, right? It's somebody else?
That's the other thing. It's some other guy that they brought in. Does he have another guy in the offseason he works with? How many different voices are in Tristan Jarry's ear?
That could be a problem.
And the other thing is the corporate feel of the Penguins right now. I think Dubas has brought some of that here. Certainly Fenway Sports Group. You had Werner came in here for an interview with Josh Getzlaf. Didn't even know the name of the arena. And now you have it just this feel like it feels to
this
me like.
This is an acquisition.
Yes.
Is what it is.
It feels to me like somebody gave Tristan Jarry a ticket and said, you'll be going to the Department of Goaltending down the hall to the right. It just has that feeling, Bob.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with saying what it is. He is struggling. We paid him a lot of money. We need better from him. And so now he's going to have to go and prove it and earn it down there before we have him back
down
up
down in the Department of Goaltending. Yeah. You ever read the Herman Melville
I wonder
shorts?
How much of this is hypnosis involved. Do you think that works on athletes? We've talked about this before.
Are they hypnotizing?
Well, I'm asking. Do you think have you ever been hypnotized ever?
Are you really asking
I'm
me
asking
that?
I'm asking you, yes.
No. You?
No. I would like to find someone who didn't said to make a big difference. Like in golf, I know they have hypnotists working with golfers.
Remember when Yager went to the acupuncture guy?
Yes.
Oh, where the Penguins peed off when I called that guy. You know, there's never any information on injuries. I think his name was John Lee, if I'm not mistaken. So I called him, and he went on for an hour about Yager's injured groin, and I wrote a story that didn't settle in well. But yeah, the corporate field. You ever read Herman Melville, Bob, the short story called Bartleby the Scrivener?
No.
Bartleby was a scrivener, which was like a corporate worker of some sort. And he grew very tired of the corporate life, and he became rebellious, but quietly rebellious. He would sit at his seat, and when one of his bosses would come by and tell him to do something, his pat answer was, I would prefer not to, which was great. It ended poorly for Bartleby. I won't give you the ending, but he hated it. It just feels, and I had a former Penguins executive tell me this when Fenway Sports Group took over. He told me that Pittsburgh and Penguins fans like family atmosphere. This is corporate atmosphere, which if you're winning is great, but they're not winning. And it just feels very, very, I can't think of a better word than corporate to me. You?
No, it has the feel of that all the way. And if you saw some of the offseason firings of people in the front office, you know, they missed the playoffs. They didn't get that money they kind of budget for. Just before we're done with the Penguins, I want to give you today's line combinations. Michelle Crecchiolo, Pens Inside Scoop. Now, how about this? Crosby and Malkin are on the same line with Raquel, which leaves open lines 2, 3, and 4 to a bunch of people that I'm not sure where. Hayes is the second line center with Puljujärvi and Beauvillier. Then Eller, Achari, O'Connor, Glass, Bunting. Bunting's down to the fourth line with Pustinen.
Yeah, he's horrible right now. Yeah, the whole thing is, it's just a bad feel right now. So we'll see what happens with Sully. All right, on to football, Bob. And here's what I would say about the Giants, is there are a couple of problematic issues for the Steelers. One, of course, is Dexter Lawrence, right? Tomlin spoke the truth the other day. If they had a better team, I think he'd be a major front runner for defensive player.
And Ryan McCollum is going to be part of this now. He's going to face that guy, and he's going to need some help.
Yeah, there's going to have to be some scheming involved there. But then you have Brian Burns out on the end with 6.5 sacks, I believe, a bunch of pressures against Dan Moore, who's been decent. He has been decent. Past couple weeks, he's given up some pressures and things of that nature. That's another matchup. And then I think that Daniel Jones is capable of having a decent game. I think he does have talent. So on a given day, I mean, wasn't he 2 games into the season this big rejuvenation story, Bob?
Yes. It's a big rejuvenation story. They thought
it was.
Listen, the guy has the potential. We've seen guys who have potential. Jameis Winston has, you know, he came in out of not playing, and look what he did.
I should say three games. Yeah, two games.
He got benched last week. I think he's mad. I think he could be motivated, and I think, you know, Malik Nabers is a guy who can do some damage in the secondary
as
well.
Him too, against Joey Porter. There are some ingredients.
I don't expect this to be easy. A lot of people do. And I understand your point earlier about you need to see a statement win, a domination, because this is a team you should be able to dominate.
Right.
But I've also seen where these kinds of games come, and then at the end of it, you're just lucky to survive.
I think my point on Daniel Jones is he's looked at as a complete joke in a lot of circles. I don't consider that to be the case. I don't think necessarily he's even a starting quarterback in the league, but on a given week, he can be pretty good. He's had games where he went 16 of 28 for 202 touchdowns. They lost to Washington by 300 passer rating. Cleveland, 24 of 34, 236, two TDs, no picks, 109.4. This is all this season, obviously.
Look at the Seattle game.
Seattle, 23 of 34, two touchdowns, no picks, 109.6.
All those
that
are on the road.
That was 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
On the road, six touchdown passes, no interceptions. He's been pretty good about protecting the ball on the road, I think.
And he's run for 200 yards. So I don't think he's very good. Don't get me wrong. He's certainly not consistently good. But the point is, in a given week, he can actually be very good.
Yeah, and that's what they have to watch out for. And honestly, though, I would expect tonight Arthur Smith, Mike Tomlin to come out. And the way Najee Harris has run, given their lack of numbers in the run defense side of this, I got to believe they're going to start there. I think you're going to see more of Mount Washington get involved in this offense. Little tiny passes that result in bigger games because no one wants to tackle him.
Yeah, and Jaylen Warren back on track here.
Yes, and the thing about Russell Wilson, he is much better at throwing the ball short range on target than Justin Fields was.
Yes.
So if those subtle little plays become, instead of turning around, get the ball behind you and you gain three, become 8 yard gains.
Not only is he better short range, he's better long range.
Oh, by far. We've already established
that. Which doesn't leave many more ranges for him to be better at.
But I mean, go back to the play that Warren, it was a hard pass behind the line of scrimmage, a backward pass.
Yeah.
That was just too hot to handle for anyone, I thought.
From Fields, yeah.
So, you know, those little things do add up, and they do mean yards, hidden little yardage.
And they also have a major, major mismatch going into this game that I will tell you about next. I'm talking in favor of the Steelers, a major advantage here.